I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good evening, and welcome to this, your worst nightmare.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world. This is Talk Is Jericho. Talk Is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk Is Jericho, the part of the now, and rock and roll now. The spell you now will be broken by Chris Jericho. Woo! The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. We're not gonna take it. No, we ain't gonna take it. We're not gonna take it. Man, I'm on and on and on and on. I'm on and on and on and on. Bound and wound, mound out. Mound out, mound out, and now, now. Mound out, now, now. Extra crazy today, you know why? 'Cause it's Friday. All right, today I've got the Godfather of Gore, Tom Savini, here. Man, I wish my nickname was the Godfather of Gore. You know, even if you don't recognize the name, you will recognize the face. You've seen him in so many movies, and so many of his creations are pop culture icons. Jason Voorhees from Friday the 13th, the zombies from Night of the Living Dead, also from Dawn of the Dead, Tales from the Dark Side, Creepshow, all the creepy cockroaches. Plus, he's been in Django Unchained. He's been in Inglourious Basterds. He is Sex Machine from Dusk Till Dawn. You know Tom Savini. You've seen his work in the movies. You've seen his special effects. You've seen his makeup. You've seen his acting, his stuntman performance. He is a horror movie legend. And he's on the show. Today we're going to give us some great secrets and some good movie set stories. Some great stories about Quentin Tarantino. But before we get to the Godfather of Gore, I just want to say thanks to all of you who have subscribed to Talk Is Jericho on iTunes. Thanks to all of you for leaving 5-star ratings and comments. Appreciate all the love and affection. If you're digging the show, I want you to tell your friends about us. I'll do the same. I'm going to share some of the comments and do some shout-outs after Tom Savini. And a big thanks to all of you doing your Amazon shopping through my links, podcastone.com. That's the easiest way to support the show, Amazon. Proud sponsor of Talk Is Jericho. Every time you shop at Amazon through my link, Amazon gives you a small percentage of your purchase back to the show. Help cover production costs. Help cover cowbell restoration costs. You don't have to buy any special. It won't cost you anything extra. So if you're going to go shopping, please go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page. Then hit the Talk Is Jericho button. Go check it out. I've got Amazon links up there for the Canada, for the UK, and for the everybody's going Amazon, Amazon USA. My voice is shot from too much yelling and screaming and rocking, but you know how it goes. You get the idea. You know the deal. Thank you again for supporting the show, supporting the show. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Rawr. All right. Hope you guys are doing amazeballs. I'm here in Australia right now. Haven't been to Australia to wrestle for 9 years, and now I'm back. It's great to be back. I've been here so many times with Fozzy, but it's cool to come back and get a chance to rock it. with all of my Australian Jerichoholics here in Melbourne, Sydney, and Perth. Had a great night in Melbourne last night, and a special moment because my friend Daniel House, who you know from the Talk is Jericho YouTube channel. The show was on the Podcast One YouTube channel that I actually interviewed Daniel. Terminal cancer. Great guy who keeps telling cancer to F off, man, and keeps surviving and doing his thing. He actually proposed to his girlfriend, Michaela, in the ring at the WWE show last night. It was an amazing experience. Of course, when he asked his girlfriend, "Will you marry me?" the amazing members of WWE Melbourne Universe, guess what they said? Yes, yes, yes. It was a great moment in time, and it's always cool when we can use our powers, use all these amazing things, all these gifts that we're given, and use them to really help people out and help all the members of the WWE Universe do different things. And of course, last night, Daniel House got to proposed to his girlfriend Michaela, and it was such an emotional moment, something I'll never ever forget again. So excited to have Tom Savini on the show, so excited to be able to say that Do You Want to Start a War, the new Fozzy record, debuted at number 54 on the charts. Such a cool moment. Lights Go Out, still bigger than ever, top 40, but the record's very eclectic, very diverse, lots of cool different types of songs, different types of moments. There's some great pop songs. If you're talking about Do You Want to Start a War, you're talking about Lights Go Out, you're talking about One Crazy Anarchist Tonight, there is a couple ballads, Scarecrow and Died With You, and a couple of super fast, crazy thrashers. Bad Tattoo is a good one. Brides of Fire is a good one. One of my favorites is Witchery, a horror movie related song that's based on American Horror Story Coven, the killer show that's on, I think it's on FX, and it's got some real kind of cool horror movie elements to it. So in honor of Mr. Savine, I am going to play Witchery, the scariest song from Do You Want to Start a War? And we're going to do that right now. So here you go. If you haven't heard it yet, if you still haven't gone out and checked out Do You Want to Start a War, what are you waiting for? If you're looking for something a little scary, looking for something a little bit creepy, a little bit horror movie-esque, then you're going to love this. Here's Witchery by Fozzy right here on Talk is Jericho.
Straight
right. What'd you think? The Witchery. Cool, right? Some scary moments in there. Amazing bass solo from Paulie D, Paul DeLeo, at the end of that. There's even a backwards message at the end of that song that Rich put in there. That originally we were going to take Flavor Flav saying, yeah, boy, and put it backwards, but it just sounded like Elmer Fudd or something. So I believe it's some blues guy saying, take your guitar back to town, and put that backwards, and you get the cool backwards message at the end of Witchery. I also love the fact that it's got this really cool, like, journey, na-na-na type thing right in the middle of this crazy, thrashy, metalcore type song. And why do we do that? Because we can. Because as you know, the only rule for Do You Want to Start a War is there are no rules. Tom Savini is here, horror movie legend. What are my favorite horror movies? People ask me that all the time. I have to say the original Halloween. That's so many amazing stories in that. Jamie Lee Curtis, not stories, so many amazing scenes. My favorite, Jamie Lee Curtis in the closet when the shape, Michael Myers, is coming in the closet trying to catch her. She's hiding in the closet. He finds her. So creepy and scary. Also, a little known fact that the mask for Michael Myers was actually a mask of a Talk Is Jericho alumni spray painted white. And that alumni, you know who it was? William Shatner. Exactly. The shape, Michael Myers, the mask he wore, that white mask, the iconic white mask, was actually a Captain Kirk mask that they found at a hardware store and spray painted white. Also love the original Dawn of the Dead that Tom Savini did the makeup on. He's going to tell us all about the stories of the makeup for Dawn of the Dead. And I like the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which I wasn't sure that I would like it, but it actually turned out to be pretty cool. I'm not a big fan of horror movie remakes, but that one was killer. I think his name is Zack Snyder. Maybe Zack Ryder, I'm not sure. Did a great job of just the overall amazing speed of the movie and the just the way they rewrote it. Very, very, very cool. Also loved, here's an interesting one, Omen 2, Damien, Omen 2. I love the Omen movies, always freaked me out because the Antichrist could be real. It's not some kind of a, you know, giant Yeti or something. It's the Antichrist, demonic possession, the end of times, the Bible, the Revelations. Really freaked me out whenever I see Damien, Omen 2, even though it's a little cheesy nowadays, still an amazing, amazing scary movie. Amityville 2, The Possession, which was a movie that focused on the reason why the Amityville horror house was haunted, freaked me out as well. Still one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. I saw that in the theaters when I was 12, and it's scarred me ever since. Bloodsucking Freaks, where I got the idea for the name Ralphus, another great movie from the 60s, late 60s, early 70s. Herschel Gordon Lewis did that one. Also love Sleepaway Camp. I love Basket Case, Sleepaway Camp 2. So many very cool horror movies that I've been obsessed with. Conjuring was another one that was really super scary. The Strangers. Oh, what a scary movie that was. Actually, I think Eric Rowan with his sheep mask or lamb mask got that idea from the original Strangers movie. So a lot of creepy movies. Of course, Jason Voorhees, one of the scariest movie monsters of all time, created by my friend and huge wrestling fan, Tom Savini. He is going to be here in just a few minutes.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talk is Jericho.
And on the line with me right now, the godfather of gore, the sultan of splatter, Tom Savini is here.
Yay!
How you doing, man?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. One of the coolest things about being on the road and being in the WWE is when you meet certain people that you're kind of have a mutual respect for and mutual I guess, fandom for. And I met you years ago, and as soon as I saw you across the crowded room in catering or something like that in Pittsburgh backstage, I was like, is that Tom Savini? What's he doing here? And it turns out that you were a big wrestling fan for many years as well.
Yeah, but we actually met at a horror convention before that. I don't remember which one, but you were fascinated by the cockroaches from Creepshow.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the films that you did the effects for was Creepshow, and it was, I believe it was E.G. Marshall, and he was like a cleanliness nut, like a germaphobe. He hated bugs, and of course he lived in a stainless steel house, and at the end he just gets attacked by this army of cockroaches.
Yeah.
And you did the effects for that.
Yeah, there were 28,000 cockroaches they collected from caves in Trinidad. The stories the entomologists told of collecting those roaches is scarier than any movie you've ever seen. I mean, it was, the roaches live in bat guano, bat dung, and they had to dig holes, and the hole would fill up, and they would throw them in plastic bags, and they brought them back to America. And thousands of them escaped in Pittsburgh.
Well, it's 28,000 cockroaches on set? How could you even do that?
Well, they collected 10,000, and then they bred 18,000 more.
Oh, my God.
They lived in a trailer that we called the Roach Motel, okay? And the biggest ones were named Steve's, after Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
The middle ones were Richard's, and the smallest ones were George's. So George Romero could say, bring me 10,000 Richards and, 5,000. But as soon as he laid them out, they disappeared. So most of the roaches were peanut shells painted black, and the real roaches were put over those.
Well, and so what was it, like a tube that you dump all the roaches into?
Syringes. I had big syringes. Like when they came out of E.G. Marshall, it was a dummy, and the syringes were loaded from below by the entomologist, because I never was in the same room with those things. I hate bugs. I was never. I would look through a window into a sealed room and say, "Okay, cue the blood, cue the roaches," and the entomologist would pump them, and they would force them out of E.G. Marshall's mouth and chest.
Jeez, it's amazing. It's amazing. I know we've just jumped right in here, but all of the amazing effects and creatures that you've created. I mean, I know you started years and years and years ago, but from Jason Voorhees to, I mean, the original Dawn of the Dead to Creepshow, so many classic iconic images created by you, by Tom Savini. How did all of this start, Tom? I mean, how did you get involved in this, and how did you become like kind of the godfather of gore, so to speak, the go-to guy for early 80s splatter films?
Well, my interest, I was in the right place at the right time, and I tell my students this all the time. I have a school here that teaches this stuff.
Right.
In Pittsburgh. And I tell my students, don't go to 7-Eleven without your portfolio, because you never know if you're going to meet the person who can help or hire you. I was lucky that George Romero is from Pittsburgh and did his movies here. So Dawn of the Dead was something I did with him, and then Friday the 13th came right afterwards. I created Jason for the Friday the 13th movies. But I was in the right place at the right time. But my interest began when I was around 11. I saw this movie called Man of a Thousand Faces, the story of Lon Chaney.
Mm-hmm.
Lon Chaney, if people don't know, was sort of a silent movie star. He was the first Phantom of the Opera and the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and he did his own makeup. And this movie was about him, and it starred James Cagney as Lon Chaney. And I flipped out. I just totally flipped out. I thought of nothing from that point on but makeup. I have a son named Lon, after Lon Chaney. He has a daughter named Chaney. I'm afraid people might think she was named after Dick Cheney, but no. It's Lon Chaney. But so this movie and this guy just, flipped me out and changed my whole life.
Now, so obviously, you had this affinity for makeup and for kind of the dark side of life. I know that you were also
the dark side of life.
The dark, always look on the dark side of life.
Oh, yeah.
But you were actually also a combat photographer in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have seen some pretty horrific images doing that as well.
Well, that's where my reputation comes from. Like I said, I started when I was 11. Vietnam, to me, was a lesson in anatomy. mm-hmm. and realistic, well, real death.
Yeah.
So, you know, I tried to incorporate what I saw there. You know, but part of what kept me sane was looking through the camera and wondering, how would I create what I'm seeing? How would I create that?
Oh, right.
How would I create this guy blown in half or an arm severed or, you know, a horrible disfigurement to the face? You know, the face, this is what makes me mad about movies. You know, they don't depict death the way I saw it, for real. You know, the muscles in your jaw just don't work anymore, so everybody, the mouth is slack open. The jaw is, you know, slack-jawed. Mm-hmm. I hate when people in movies die and they close their mouths and they want to look pretty for the camera. This is not the way it is. I mean, mm-hmm. the jaw always goes slack. If I ever do a zombie flick, and I am up to do one, the zombies are all going to be slack-jawed because, it, you know, this doesn't work anymore when you're dead. So mm-hmm. It was a lesson in anatomy. It was, how do I create this stuff realistically? So the fake stuff that I was creating, if it didn't give me the same feeling I got when I saw the real stuff, then the fake stuff wasn't real enough, and that's where my reputation for realism came from.
So did you get drafted?
No, I enlisted. I enlisted to stay out of Vietnam. You know, if you're drafted, you go into infantry, but if you enlist, you get your choice of schools. Well, I was already a photographer. You know, I was already a photographer. I already had a dark room in my house, a colored dark room.
Uh-huh.
So I figured the Army photo school would be a breeze, and it was. And I maxed it, so I must have been good because they sent me right over to Vietnam after the photo school. You know, so.
That's very interesting how you could kind of, I guess, turn yourself in. But if you did turn yourself into the U.S. Army, you could choose exactly whatever you wanted to do instead of the infantry. That was actually a pretty smart move.
Well, it was, yeah. I get told that a lot. But, you know, I was still there. I still saw horrible stuff. You know, I wasn't in the front lines like mm-hmm. the grunts. Those grunts would come into base camp, you know, every couple of months, and they were zombies. You look in their eyes, and they were gone, you know, the stuff they were seeing. And that's why so many of them come back. And, you know, my marriage went right in the toilet, and I wasn't even in the thrust of things.
Right.
So you know, the problems they had and still have, you know.
Sure. Did you have to learn, like, do basic training and all that stuff, too? Did you have to learn how to shoot a gun and everything?
Oh, hell yeah, that was first.
Okay.
Basic training was first, and then the Army Photo School. And then, after the photo school, because of going to Vietnam, you went to this special combat training thing, you know.
Oh.
And that was scary stuff because, you know, you had weapons, and everybody had blanks, but they threw you in combat situations,
mm-hmm.
You know, to get you used to, you know, being fired at and stuff, you know. You know, Vietnam was kind of scary. You have, You know, after 6 months, you're allowed to go in R&R, which, you know, some guys went to Japan, most of the guys went to Australia. I went to Hawaii to, you know, hook up with my wife at the time. But I waited until my 10th month because I didn't want to come back to Vietnam and have 6 months left. I came back and had 2 months left.
Smart,
yeah. But they put me on the worst duty possible. It was 30 days of guard duty, which means you're in a tower. With four guys, two guys below, two guys above, and there's the woods. So if they come at you, you know, you're the first contact, you know.
Wow.
So this was bad, but, and you put, real quick, you put trip flares in front of your little bunker there, and there's seven bunkers, and they're about 50 yards apart, and there's an officer in the first one. But if you see, you know, 1,000 Viet Cong running at you, you were not allowed to open fire.
Mm-hmm.
You had to call the command bunker, call the officer, and he would come with a night scope, and if he saw them, he would have to call battalions, you know, before you were allowed to open fire.
Right.
That's just the way it was. So one night, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and my trip flares go off, and I immediately open fire. I started, and the guys in my bunker, they all opened fire. And every bunker was like an arsenal. We had Claymore mines. We had grenade launchers. We're setting off everything. And then every bunker is opening fire in front of my bunker. And it was a duck.
A duck is what you were shooting at?
A duck had tripped set off my trip flare. So they took me off guard duty. And the rest of my time in Vietnam, I was called the duck slayer, okay? But the next night, we were attacked for real. Guys died in those bunkers. I wasn't there. because they took me off the guard duty because of the night before.
Wow.
The duck saved my life. I never eat duck. I mean, to this day, I never eat duck because a duck saved my life.
That is a crazy story, man. Paying back the duck species by not eating them.
That's right.
Wow. So you basically escape Vietnam by the skin of your teeth thanks to the duck. And you mentioned that you grew up in Pittsburgh, and as did George Romero. How did you hook up with him for Dawn of the Dead?
Well, he came to my high school when I was a sophomore looking for a young actor for a screen test. He picked me out of 1,500 students.
Wow.
And the movie never got made. It was called Wine of the Fawn. Never got made. Mm-hmm. So years later, I heard he was doing Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I took my portfolio down there, and he was very busy. I followed him from office to office, flipping pages and showing him. He said, yeah, we can use you on this gig, okay. But then the Army called me in, you know, because when you enlist, you have 140 days, and they can call you within that time. So I was in Vietnam when he made Night of the Living Dead. So we kind of had a history. So after I got back from Vietnam, and I went through 7 years of, like, you know, repertory theater, makeup director for a couple of theaters, I came back to Pittsburgh to take advantage of the GI Bill, and he was gearing up to do a movie called Martin. Mm-hmm. So I went down there, and I wanted to be the vampire, but it was already cast. So I did Martin with him, and then Dawn of the Dead was next. You know, so like I said, we had a history. He knew I did effects, and for Dawn of the Dead, I went back to Carolina and was doing a play, and I got a telegram from him that said, we got another gig, start thinking of ways to kill people, and that was Dawn of the Dead.
So you actually were kind of an actor first, a special effects guy second.
Well, no, because makeup effects was always my first love. I would put the makeup kit up in the attic and forget about it and try to pursue acting.
Mm-hmm.
But it always called my name and kept calling me back to it. But I have a history. You know, I was an acting directing major at Carnegie Mellon University.
Okay.
And did 7 years of repertory theater. So acting was always, and you know, every time I did effects in a movie, I tried to play a part in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that has led to now just parts. You know, I don't do makeup effects anymore for a living.
Right.
I have a school, of course. I mean, I was in the last movie, Django Unchained. I was in that. I just did Machete Kills. The biggest thing the biggest thing was Dusk Till Dawn with that, you know, crotch rocket that I wore. You know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I want to talk all about that. But just to ask, going to back to the Dawn of the Dead, you know, nowadays zombie movies, you see one every month. Walking Dead is so popular. Zombies are kind of like the in thing. Back in 1978, when Dawn of the Dead was being made, that, I mean, obviously Night of the Living Dead was the first, but that was the first zombie movie that was ever on my radar, and probably the biggest zombie movie ever made at the time. What were your instructions from George as far as creating all of these zombies, basically having no template? Because Dawn of the Dead and your makeup basically set the tone for zombie makeup even up until this day.
I agree. I mean, when you think of a zombie movie, classic zombie movie, the first thing you think of is Dawn of the Dead.
Absolutely.
And there were no instructions from George. You know, this movie was in color. Night of the Living Dead was in black and white.
Yes.
So, you know, my premise then was just to paint the zombies gray.
Mm-hmm.
Then you would see the difference between human beings and zombies simply because they're gray. But the lighting changed inside the mall, outdoors. Sometimes they look blue, sometimes they look green, you know. So, but it was always gray makeup on them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we did special stuff. You know, I had a, you know, it was just me. It was just me and an assistant. We did all that stuff in Dawn of the Dead. But George, you know, most of the stuff in that movie was not in the script.
Hmm.
We would just come up with. I literally took George's telegram at what it said. Start thinking of ways to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So we would sit around and, you know, hey, how about if we drive a screwdriver through a zombie's ear?
That's right. Yeah.
We go to George and say, you know, we ask him that, and he'll go, okay. So, you know, it was a couple hours later, we're painting soda stars silver and cutting screwdrivers in half and making retractable screwdrivers with blood that would come out of us. You know, we were creating the stuff. And so we came up with, because like I said, it's just me and whoever an assistant I could grab at the time. would come up with the ways to kill people, and George just let us do it. That's what's great about George. As an actor, he lets you improvise, and as an effects guy, he lets you improvise. But what you said about Dawn of the Dead, you know, the template for what's going on today, I think the sequel to Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead,
mm-hmm.
really set that mark, because that's my masterpiece, the stuff I did in that movie. And in that movie, the zombies were not just painted gray. Every zombie was different.
Mm-hmm.
Because having coroner friends, you know, Dr. Cyril Wecht and guys like that, who I would ask for advice, you know, if you die in an attic and someone else dies in the basement, you're going to look a lot different than the guy that died in the attic.
That's know? Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, in a wet basement or a dry, sunny, hot attic, or ethnic groups, you know, you will look different. You're just the way people die. Not everybody looks the same. You know, you'll be bloated in the basement and fried in the attic. But your skin, the skin color is all going to be different. So, and the first sign of that is when Laurie Cardill in Day of the Dead is looking at a counter on a wall, and all these zombie hands come through the walls at her, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all different. So that was really the beginning, I think, Day of the Dead. And, you know, I just did a convention. I just did the San Francisco thing and sat there with Greg Nicotero and his family the whole weekend. Greg is the exec producer on The Walking Dead.
Yes.
I met him when he was 14. He worked for me on a bunch of films, including, you know, Day of the Dead. And now that's what he does. He's the king of zombies today.
So he was kind of like your protege, and now the lineage lives on.
Exactly. I passed on the torch.
But you had a pretty great death in Dawn of the Dead. I mean, you're one of the bikers that invades the mall. And if I recall, aren't you the guy that went to check your blood pressure?
No. Everybody thinks that's me, but it wasn't. That's a guy named Pat Buba. He was actually one of the editors.
Okay. That was a great death, though. The guy goes to put his arm in one of those old-school blood pressure-checking things just because he wants to, and, of course, he can't get out in time, and the zombies rip his arm off, blood pressure goes from, you know, 80 over 20 to, like, zero.
I don't know why everybody thinks that's me, because later in the film, you know, I'm the leader of the bike gang.
Yeah.
I got Ken Foray. I chased Ken Foray up into the ceiling, and he shoots me, and I go over the balcony into the fountain. That was my big death in Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, yes. I guess everyone thinks that because doesn't he get his arm pulled out and then get completely eviscerated where the zombies are just pulling his entrails out?
Well, that's another guy. That's Tasso, one of my best. He was my assistant. He was my stunt partner, because I also did all the stunts in that movie.
Wow.
Every time a zombie gets hit by a truck or, you know, is kicked backwards, I got the blonde girl that gets kicked out. That's me in the blonde wig.
Oh, wow.
So I brought Tasso in, and he helped me do a lot of the stunts, you know.
So let's talk, when you're talking about, let's say, pulling all the entrails out, what exactly is that?
Pig entrails. Pig entrails from a slaughterhouse.
Oh.
Now, I was just at this convention, I was just talking about, somebody asked the questions, you know, how come you use real pig intestines? Why couldn't you just make some rubber ones, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And my reply was, and this is the truth, that nothing moves and slides and slithers and splats and hits the floor like the real thing, you know? I try to, you know, even in Day of the Dead, they tear the bad guy apart, and you know, his guts are all over the place. Unfortunately, in that case, we used the same 5-gallon drum of pig guts all through the movie,
mm-hmm.
and we kept it in the refrigerator. Now, we went to Florida for 3 weeks to do some shooting down there. While we were gone, somebody unplugged the refrigerator.
Ooh.
So these guts were just rotting and rancid, and those are the guts we used for tearing the bad guy apart. You know, it's 2:00 in the morning. You can't go out and get new pig intestines just anywhere. So we all had gas masks on and English leather on our lips and wax up our noses. But the poor guy, the poor victim, he was trapped in the floor. Joe Pilato, he was trapped in the floor. And you would see anything up his nose, you know. So he had to lie there for hours and hours with that rotting pig intestines, you know, under his rubber chest. I know it was horrible. He was ready to throw up.
You mentioned you can't just go get more pig entrails. Where do you get them in the first place? Just go to the local slaughterhouse and go to the pig entrail section?
You can't get them today. You can't get them today.
Oh.
Maybe from a place called Carolina Biological, you might be able to get some. But there were, back then, there were slaughterhouses that, you could just ask, can I come and get a bucket of pickens? Well, sure, yeah.
So you know, a few years later, now you've really kind of made your name with Dawn of the Dead, and you do Creepshow, as we talked about earlier, and all these really cool movies and effects. How did the gig come up for Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th? I mean, you basically created that iconic character, right? The look,
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah, after Dawn of the Dead, I mean, there were producers, and lucky me, there were a lot of horror movies, you know, being produced back then. And
yeah, there was in the early 80s. It was kind of the big thing, right? A lot of slasher movies then.
That was the age of the splatter movie, the 80s, you know. So Sean Cunningham, you know, wanting, being one of the producers, wanting the same success as, you know, Dawn of the Dead, hired this, called the same guy, me. Mm-hmm. So I had a meeting with him, and they had no ending to the script, and no really you know, spelled out description of Jason. You know, Jason was this guy I saw around my neighborhood when I was a kid. He was kind of deformed, had one ear lower than the other. He looked like Quasimodo. So that's what I based Jason on, this guy I saw when I was
a kid. You based him on somebody that you really knew?
Yeah, a guy named Bill Bailey, just a derelict, when I was a kid walking around the neighborhood. Hmm. But the end of Friday the 13th, that's something I came up with, was, you know, Jason coming up out of the water and grabbing the girl, because I had just seen Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the movie Carrie, at the end of it, you know, Carrie's, you know, gone, and you sing, and the music starts playing like the credits are going to roll any minute, and that hand comes out of the grave and just scares the crap out of you. You know?
Yeah.
So I said, we should do the same thing. And they said, well, how? Jason didn't exist. You know, he's a kid that didn't want to make it a dream. You know, when audiences see dreams, they accept whatever goes on in them.
Yeah.
You know, there was a whole, wasn't Dallas, or wasn't a whole year of Dallas?
Dallas was a dream, yeah.
A dream, you know, and people just buy that shit. You know?
St. Elsewhere was all an autistic boy's daydream as well. That whole show,
really?
St. Elsewhere, yeah.
I didn't know that.
the ultimate swerve.
Yeah, but I came up with Jason coming out of the water because I saw Carrie, and that scared the hell out of people. And the movie, you know, I didn't do part two. They offered me part two, but they had Jason running around, and you know, like I said, the mother was the killer in the first movie. Jason was a kid that died, you know.
Right.
And then they didn't offer me part three, but the series was waning, so the part four is actually called The Final Chapter.
That's right.
That was going to be the last one because, you know, they hired me again. So it's like, it's the Frankenstein syndrome. I got to create Jason in part one, and I got to kill him in part four. You know, I cut his brain in half. I cut his head in half. You know, he lands on the machete and slides down it. And that made so much money, that movie, that we're going to see a Friday the 13th part 13. And believe it or not, I'm being considered to direct that next Friday the 13th movie.
Wow. Well, that's even the Frankenstein syndrome plus one.
Exactly.
You created him, you killed him, and now you're directing him.
I know. I hope it happens. I want to bring Kane Hodder back as.
He's kind of the classic Jason Voorhees, Kane Hodder. Now,
He played him like four times, you know.
He did. Yeah.
To me, the best Jason, aside from Kane, was Ted White, the guy that played Jason in part four. Ted White is a major Hollywood stuntman. He doubled John Wayne. He doubled Charlton Heston. This guy was 62 or 3 or something when he played Jason. I know him today. He's in his 80s, and he still could kick my ass, your ass. He's such a badass guy, even in his 80s, you know.
Yeah.
But Kane, you know, Kane, we do a lot of conventions together, you know. I love Kane, so I'm going to bring him back if I can.
We're having a great conversation here with Tom Savini, the godfather of gore and the duck slayer. We'll be back after we find out what's going on with our sexy beast sponsors. This is Talk is Jericho. Stick around.
Talk is Jericho.
Welcome back to Talk is Jericho. Tom Savini is here. You were talking about how you created Jason Voorhees, how you created all the zombies on Dawn of the Dead. Obviously not knowing how iconic these movies would become at the time, what were the budgets like? Was it hard for you to get the task of creating all these amazing creatures and deaths and monsters? I'm assuming it's probably not the biggest budgets that you had to work with.
No, they were very tiny budget, but I never thought of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, where my reputation came from, you know, getting a lot done on like no money, you know. I think Don was $1 million, you know, maybe a million.
That's it.
Bucks. Yeah.
Wow.
It was a little bit more for Day of the Dead. But, I mean, today's, you know, all budgets are sky high today, you know,
yeah.
when zombie films, you know. I always think that limitations make you more creative. Not having enough money, not having enough people, mm-hmm. not having enough supplies, then you got to be more creative. And that's really where it comes from. That's where it flourishes, you know, having limitations.
It almost seems like, I mean, I don't know how you feel about CGI nowadays, but it almost seems like, I'm sure it's 3 times as expensive, but it's probably hardly as creative as it was when you were working with, you know, $100 and real pig entrails. How do you feel about CGI?
Well, no, I love CGI when it's done well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's done well, it's just priceless, like all the stuff they did in Lord of the Rings. And it was very minuscule. They'd put a makeup on somebody,
mm-hmm.
but then they would just enlarge the eyes or something with CGI.
Right.
A lot of practical makeup effects in Lord of the Rings and movies like that. So I think when it enhances, if the movie is all about those special effects, you tune out.
Mm-hmm.
As an audience, you tune out. That's why reality shows are so great, popular today, because you want to see people, you want to see characters, you want to see interaction, you know. If it's
yeah.
all about special effects, you know, it's just like watching, you know, fireworks into oblivion. Eventually, you will get bored, you know.
Yeah.
But I wish we had it, you know, back when I was trying to solve problems, you know, like hiding an edge or creating, you know. It is very expensive, and now there's a war. Kind of an unspoken war between practical effects and CGI effects. In fact, some of the recent movies, like the remake of Evil Dead, was bragging that it used no CGI. It was all practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
The new Star Wars movie that's coming out, J.J. Abrams, is having puppets built. He's doing a lot of practical
stuff. Oh, wow.
He's having practical stuff, a lot of practical stuff, in the new Star Wars. So there's kind of like this collective dislike of bad CGI. In fact, 3 major visual effects companies have gone bankrupt because they're sending it overseas. They're sending it to, you know, China, India, mm-hmm. someplace, visual effects. So that's also, you know, hurting the CGI business, which is great for me because, you know, shows like Face Off, which are real as far as deadlines and having to create something, make special makeup effects a celebrity today.
Sure.
You know? So it does me good, it does the school good, because we teach special makeup effects, you know. So, that's a long answer to your question about CGI, but that's how I feel. I like it when it's done well, but I still love... You know, when you watch Rick Baker's werewolf transformation in American Werewolf, that's happening right in front of you.
It's classic.
It's happening
yeah.
right there. When you watch my stuff in the movie, it's happening right there
yes.
in front of you. A camera is on what's happening. It's not added later, you know, like CGI.
Sure, sure. I mean, like you mentioned bad CGI. If you look at some of like the Sci-Fi Network CGI they use, which looks so fake, like a cartoon, and you go back to some of the Ray Harryhausen stuff from the 50s and 60s, it's a little bit jerky, but it looks a million times better, and that's all built with puppets and dolls.
I'm glad you said that because, you know, I went and I saw Clash of the Titans, the new one. Right?
Yes.
And I had to go home and put on Ray Harryhausen's as an antidote.
Yeah. As a cleanser, as a palate cleanser.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, you over the years, like you said, you acted as well as doing FX, and then you slowly got out of the special effects and straight into acting pretty much exclusively and directing. What was your mindset in kind of giving up on FX and going specifically into the other side of the camera?
Well, what did I have a mindset? I think it just evolved, you know.
So yeah.
You know, it's like human existence. We're not aware of the evolution taking place, but it happens. it just kind of evolved, you know. I think the last movie I did physical effects on was called Mr. Stitch. We did that in France with Rutger Hauer, and there's a lot of stuff in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then I guess right after that, I started getting parts. I mean, I was doing, I think Dusk Till Dawn was shortly after that, you know, and that...
Yeah,
you know, having an iconic. It wasn't a big part, but it was iconic as far as playing Sex Machine and wearing the big gun. You know?
yeah, so, Sex Machine had like an athletic cup, and it would it would drop down and a pistol would come out where your cock would be, and then where the balls would be were two ammo chambers, and you would shoot the vampires from your lower abdominal area.
I promise you, I'm sitting at conventions and guys would walk up, they look at the picture of the dick gun, it's like, how did the bullets get into the chain? Listen, it's only a movie.
That's right. But how was it?
Rodriguez is shooting right now the Dusk Till Dawn television series.
Oh, wow.
It's that movie broken up into 10 episodes, okay?
Okay.
And it's going to be on something called the El Rey Network.
Oh, yeah, that's like the new Mexican channel that's starting up.
Yeah, I'm hoping to play or to redo Sex Machine in that, but it's all a bunch of new actors.
Sure.
Clooney, Tarantino, they're all being replaced, you know.
It's interesting because I just watched Machete Kills. That's actually how I thought about having you on the show. And okay. Sofia Vergara has the dick gun. Yeah, she stole it.
I was at the premiere. I was at the premiere, and Robert Rodriguez is sitting right behind me. And when I saw that, I told him, "I'm like, what?
Hey,
well, I'm passing on the torch, you know." So.
Yeah, at least it's to a girl.
That movie was hilarious.
How is it? I mean, you seem to be kind of one of the go-to guys for Robert Rodriguez and for Quentin Tarantino. How is it working with those guys? I mean, you're talking about some pretty high-level iconic directors there.
Oh, I know. I told at the premiere of Machete Kills, Robert brought me on stage, and I said that, you know, Robert, you fill the Schopenhauer definition of what a genius is, and that is that, you know, talent hits a target no one else can. Genius hits a target no one else can see, even, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way these guys are. They're, you know, Quentin is just, you know, he shot Django Unchained with one camera and bragged about when we finally were killed, when all of us trackers are sitting in the shed and Jamie Foxx comes in and blows us all away.
Right.
We're all sitting there with squibs all over us. There are hundreds of squibs. The wine, the food, the cars, everything is squibbed. Thirty seconds before it goes off, he makes an announcement that this is the 1600th setup with one camera. That's how they made the old movies. That's how John Ford made movies.
Yeah.
Quentin is so caught up in the pictures. They're not movies. They're pictures. You know,
films.
Studio moguls called them. Yeah. And but Robert is the opposite. He'll use CGI and anything he can out of the toolbox, you know. But Quentin, you know, they're both just 13-year-old kids.
Yeah.
That have these great toys, you know.
Well, I mean, and they also have a lot of respect and an affinity for 70s films. I mean, that's what the whole Grindhouse movie was based
absolutely.
On. And all of their movies have, you know, they're using 70s music. They're using the 70s kind of zoom in close ups, especially Machete. I mean, that is a movie made in the 70s that got transported into, you know, the 2000s.
Exactly. Now that's a quick story about Quentin. I mean, his sets are a lot of fun because he'll do like seven or eight takes.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll announce to the cast and the crew, okay, we're going to do one more. Why? And the whole cast and crew chimes in singing, because we love making movies. You know? I heard about that happening, and I was involved in it on Django. When the slave guy is up the tree and I have him up there with the dogs, the attack dogs?
Yes.
Okay. When he comes down, they attach a fake arm to him, and the dog goes to, you know, rip it off, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he has his real arm behind his back. So, I mean, but every take you could see the guy's real arm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to say anything because it's just my friends. K&B is doing the effects, you know? But Quentin happened to walk by and we're chatting between takes. And I said, you remember when I did that effect in Day of the Dead? Because the guy gets his arm ripped off in Day of the Dead.
Right.
And, of course, Quentin had seen it because he's seen everything ever made, you know?
Yeah.
I said, well, we dug a hole in the ground so the guy's real arm would fit in the hole. And the only arm you see is the fake arm, and the guy lies there. And he says, but what if the dogs drag him? I said, well, you put one of those anchors that you put in the ground for lights and stuff, and the guy with his arm behind his back can just hold on to it, you know?
Right.
I said, but don't say that I said anything, okay? So he goes back, and he's, you know, setting up a shot, and and 10 minutes later, he says, why don't you guys dig a hole under that guy? So the arm, and they were like, it's going to work. I think it'll work. So they did it, and it was beautiful. Seven takes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, five minutes later, I'm standing there, and Quentin walks by. And he puts something in my hand. And I look, and it's $5.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, we have a tradition on my set that if somebody from another department helps a different department, it's called the $5 shot, you know. So I became the $5 shot hero. But he said, never before has an expert in this other department made a comment that solved the problem, you know. So
wow.
That was a big moment. That was a big moment for me. I made him sign it, and I framed the five, you know. It's like a big deal.
And that's so cool. And isn't K&B Nicotero's company?
That's right, exactly.
So there you go. You were like telling the youngster, hey, buddy, you don't know everything yet. Come talk to the master.
Yeah, but I didn't want him to know that I said that.
Sure. Yeah.
But it became a big deal later because I became the $5 hero guy, you know. but the point is, that's what it's like on a Tarantino set. It's very, the atmosphere is just so pleasant, so rewarding, so enlightening, you know.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the movies are always great. And once again, I love the fact how he shows respect. Like you said, he's seen everything ever. So he'll bring, you know, Tom Savini on set and use Don Johnson and use, you know, John Travolta and all these kind of guys from another era. You know, I thought Django, I mean, it's always hard to compare with Pulp Fiction, but I thought it was definitely one of his best movies for sure.
Yeah. You know, I just rewatched Inglourious Basterds.
Another great one.
That's just a brilliant movie, visually stunning, you know.
Absolutely. His cinematography is just off the charts, you know.
You've
kept mentioning your Tom Savini special makeup effects program that you have in Pittsburgh. Tell us about what the students learn and what you teach them when they come to your school. Is this something that runs year-round?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's 18 months. I mean, we're not kidding around. There are schools that are 4 months, 11 weeks, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't even learn it in the 16 months. You are constantly learning. So my school is like the number one school there is because of that.
Mm-hmm.
The longest program there is, 16 months. The semesters start February, June, and October. So if you come in from any of those points is 16 months, you know, to graduate. And it's a degree program.
Okay.
It's a degree. It's the only makeup effects. And the parents love that. Parents love the fact.
Of course.
And the students' attitude is, this is school? You know, because they're having so much fun.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Making their dreams. They've nicknamed it Savini High. You know, I mean, I love that. You know, Savini Land, Savini High, you know. Tomorrow, I was supposed to do it yesterday, but because of the weather and stuff here, I do a seminar with the new students that come in. The new semester comes in, or it came in Thursday, I'm sorry. And they have a seminar. They spend their first couple of days with me,
mm-hmm.
Doing a seminar where, you know, I chat with them, I answer questions, and I ask them some questions like, do you know who Boris Karloff is? And, you know, most of them don't know that.
Isn't that amazing? You know, isn't that amazing? You know, it's like asking a new wrestler, you know, who's Bruno Sammartino? And if someone doesn't know, it's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you in this for?
If you're interested in it, God, do some research. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you should just
find
know
out
that.
Who the best guys were, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's just stuff
I'm glad you said Bruno, because that's Pittsburgh. That's him.
Yeah, Pittsburgh that's area. Him. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was me growing up with Bruno, yeah.
So students come, and they have like a 16th-month program. Obviously, you have instructors. You can't be there for 16 months with all the other stuff that you do. How often do you appear at the school, and how often are you there?
Well, if I'm in town, I'm there once or twice a week, and what I'm doing is making sure that their photos. We have a photo studio there. We got a full-time, guy that teaches photography there.
Mm-hmm.
I make sure that they're putting their photographing everything they do. And listen, there's no formula for success, but here's what works, and it works for makeup effects. It works for acting. You know,
mm-hmm.
If you're an actor, you put together an acting reel and you put that in front of people that can help or hire you. Now, so I make sure that they're photographing everything they do and keeping a portfolio. You know, today you can have a portfolio on your phone, which is something you have with you all the time.
Sure.
You can put it on a flash drive on your keychain. It's great to have a hard copy, you know, in your car, because really you do not know when you're going to meet that person who can help or hire you. For me, the two biggest things that happened in my life was because I had my portfolio in the car. So when I was in the right place at the right time, I was ready. So that's what I drum into their head. So if I'm in town, I'm there at least, you know, once or twice a week, making sure that that's happening. Okay.
So you said that you had, what was the time that you had your portfolio in your car and got a gig out of it?
Well, in the early 70s, I was in the bar. I don't drink, but I was painting signs for this bar, and I was delivering them. And there's a guy sitting in the corner.
he looked like Indiana Jones, leather jacket, fedora, you know.
Yeah.
Started chatting, and he had just done this movie called Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things. He was the art director on that movie. And I showed him my portfolio. 3 days later, Chris, I was in Florida doing their next movie, which was Death Dream. And this is a Bob Clark film. Bob Clark, who did Porky's and
yes.
Murder by Decree and Christmas Story. You know, it was Bob Clark back then. So 3 days after I showed my portfolio to some stranger in a bar, who I didn't know I was going to meet, I'm doing my first movie, you know. And then we did the second movie in Canada, Deranged. And then, you know, some years went by before I came back to Pittsburgh and did, you know, Martin and Don, and the rest is history, you know.
And talking about just never knowing where you're going to get work, and I just got hip to this yesterday. In 2010, you're very good friends with Jerry Lawler. He was running the Memphis Wrestling TV show, and you were the evil heel that was blaming Lawler for the death of Andy Kaufman and sent your movie monsters to get revenge.
I sent Jason. I don't know who else I sent. I forget now. But
Joker Boy or something. Joker Wild or something.
I don't know. But I hear those things are on YouTube because I really want to see them. I've never seen them.
I watched them last night. It was awesome.
So it is on YouTube?
It is on YouTube. Just type in Tom Savini, Jerry Lawler, and the whole angle is there. How did that ever come to fruition?
Well, that was Jerry's idea, of course, you know. Because, you know, at that Royal Rumble, you were in Pittsburgh the day before that, when it was here.
Yeah.
You know, and I go, Jerry, Charlie Robinson, you know, they invite me backstage, but, you know, I have more of an in now because I'm designing Triple H's new crown helmet. You know, the last one was silver. He wants a gold one, so I had to fit him on that. So, you know, I hang out and I find out, you know, Randy Orton will walk in, hey, Sex Machine or MVP or, you know, by Paul White, Big Show, they're fans.
Well,
of mine, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, like for me, I know we met at the comic convention, but just to see you backstage, it's always kind of cool to see Tom Savini hanging out. And plus, you have such respect for the guys and for
yeah.
How have you been a wrestling fan your whole life?
Well, yeah. I mean, I see them, and I even said this in the ad, in the letter that I wrote for the Crown for Triple H, that I see these guys as you guys, mm-hmm. as gladiators in a professional athletic stunt show, you know.
Yeah.
That's how I see it, you know. But speaking of that, if I don't mind, you don't mind me asking you a question, you know.
Sure.
Everybody, my friends all wonder, the rumor is that you've retired, but, you know, I know how it works, and you're probably going to be back, aren't you, or?
Well, it's kind of like what we were just talking about with you. It's like you came in sort of as an FX guy and transitioned into an actor, and it's kind of the same thing with me. I mean, I still love the WWE, and I would still go back under the right circumstances if it was something interesting, but I've got other stuff going on that's been going really good for me as well. So, you know, I think you can understand.
Yeah, it's a great feeling.
It is. You know, I think when you're at the end of your run, if you can, you know, go out on your own terms or move on your own terms, it's a lot better than waiting for them to take you out behind the barn and put a bullet in your head, you know?
Yeah, that's never going to happen to you, of course.
But I mean, I would never say the word retire. So I'm sure at some point I'll go back. And, you know, like I said, in the meantime, it's fun doing all these other cool things that I'm getting
Batista,
the chance to do.
Batista just came back.
He did, yeah. And he'd been gone for like 4 years. So, you know.
Yeah, he might have made a couple of movies, you know.
Yeah. Once you get to a certain level, it's the same as you. If you called, you know, whoever and said, I want to do FX on the next whatever movie, they'd bring you in a second. You know, once you get to that certain level of notoriety, you kind of can call your own shots.
That's good when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you're making Triple H's crown, you said. Have you made stuff for the WWE before, or is this the first time?
No, that's the first time.
That's great. Well, they picked the right guy for it. Absolutely. Tom, what else do you have coming up? You said you're getting ready to maybe direct some movies and some more acting at all anytime soon?
Well, there's a lot of scripts here and a lot of conversations, but, you know, like no contracts, you know, yet.
Sure, sure.
I learned some lessons the hard way. I don't even get involved with a project unless half the money's up front.
And of course.
To me.
Yeah.
Because then you know they're kind of serious, you know, but I'm also doing an autobiography that's going to be out on Halloween
this
year. So I'm constantly writing now And getting all these photos together for that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get in that TV show, The Arrow.
Uh-huh.
So it's my agent. You know, I'm here in Pittsburgh. I'm not in Hollywood knocking on doors every day.
Yeah.
I'm lucky, though. I'm lucky I can be here. You know, and they call me and I go where they are. So.
Yes.
That's what it's about. You're waiting for the next phone call. Yeah.
Absolutely. And in the meantime, it's Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. Go to www.dec.edu/TS. That's the university where the class takes place.
And actually, it's simpler just to go to my website,
okay.
Savini.com.
Savini.com.
Remember, just Savini.com. www.savini.com, and you can link right to the school. There are lots of other things right through there.
I was trying to get fancy. Just forget what I said and go to Savini.com, or else Tom will come and put a machete in your head.
Oh, yeah. But people want me to do that.
I know, exactly. Hey, go to Savini.com, and you can learn how to put a machete in your own head.
That's right. And there's journals from all the movies that I've worked on as an actor, and, you know, lots of photo albums. It's a pretty wild place.
That's very cool. Tom, thank you so much for being on the
My
show
pleasure.
Today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for calling me out of the blue. I totally was enamored and honored that you had contacted me.
Like I said, I just happened to watch, I was a big fan of Machete when it came out, and when I saw number two and I saw you on there, I was like, I got to get Tom on the show. He'd be super interesting,
yeah.
And I was right. It was great to have you, man, and
oh, great.
Look forward to running into you again soon sometime.
Okay.
Take care, Tom. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Chris, and best of luck with the show and everything.
Thanks to the godfather of gore, Tom Savini. Such great stories. What a pioneer. What a legend in the world of horror movies. And thanks to all of you for listening to Talk is Jericho. I'm excited to continue the ball rolling here at WWE Australia. We've got Sydney tonight on Friday, tomorrow night in Perth. Head back to the States with the crazy trip of Perth to Sydney, 5 hours. Sydney to LA, 17 hours. LA to Portland, 3 hours. And then we have Raw, Monday Night Raw in Portland. Very, very excited about that. Fozzy hitting the road again in September. So go check that out, all the Fozzy tour dates at FozzyRock.com, with Theory of a Dead Man starting September 17th in Phoenix, Arizona. Tempe, Arizona, to be exact. So lots of cool stuff going on. San Jose, August 16th. SummerSlam in Los Angeles, August 17th. So many cool things. So come on down. Come check out Y2J at all of the amazing places that I'm going to be. Also got some in-store appearances, which of course are signings for Do You Want to Start a War? Come down to your local record store. We've got Portland on Monday, August 11th at Music Millennium. We've got Las Vegas, August 18th at Zia Records. September 1st in Des Moines at the FYE Jordan Creek Town Center. October 2nd in Baltimore at the Soundgarden. October 3rd in Knoxville at Disc Exchange. October 10th in Rochester at the Record Archive. All of those dates, plus all the tour dates, which I will get into more detail in a couple upcoming weeks, available now at FozzyRock.com. All right. Thanks to all of you who picked up the new Fozzy record, Do You Want to Start a War? We played Witchery, the scariest song on the record earlier. Like I said, we're going to be hitting the road with Theory of a Dead Man starting September 17th in Tempe, Arizona. And as promised, a few shout-outs to some of you who took the time to give me some ratings and comments on iTunes. James Card, WH217, Darcy, Jeremy Forehand, Y Foxes, and Miss Lippe. I love Miss Lippe. All gave us 5-star ratings, and thanks so much to them, and thanks so much to Mick Dizzle 007. He commented, thanks for the laughs on the ride to work. And Jeff Cam 78 said he won't ever miss an episode. Big ups to all of you for listening. Wouldn't be doing this if not for all of you. Thank you so much. And wouldn't be doing this if not for my sponsors. Let me drop 2 shows every week for you for free, 4 times a week. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm having a blast doing these shows. Hope you're having a blast listening to them. If you want to help support the show, easiest way to do that is do your online shopping through my Amazon links. They're easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Click on Talk is Jericho, and you see all 3 of my Amazon links, UK, US, and Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free 4 times a week. No hidden fees or extra charges. You're just getting your shopping done, helping me out, helping the show in the process. Thank you so much. And guys, you are the coolest. You are the sexiest. You are the ginchiest. We will see you next week. But until then, that's it. In the meantime and in between time, another edition of Talk is Jericho. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We will see you soon with some amazing guests as always next week. Take care, be cool, and a big yeah, boy.
So many screams, so little time.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.